This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Bookmark. I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, and this is Afterwards, the show that focuses on literary connections, on the way books touch and are touched by everything around them, on the various ways we come to read the things we read. I'm talking self-help today, which is interesting because in the 7 years I've been doing Bookmark, I don't think I've ever spoken to a self-help author. So I called a friend of mine. You may have heard Shankar Shantiram on Enterprise with Frida Liu. Well, he's got a brand new book out, which is why he's now on Bookmark. So, Shankar Shantiram, you've been on BFM for like so many years.
I don't know, coming on 6-7 years now.
First time on Bookmark.
I think so. I feel very honored, actually.
Welcome to the show,
never,
sir.
I never thought I'd make it. I'm the pinnacle of my BFM life now, you know, that I've turned up at the most intellectual show of it all.
I think Sharad will have something to say about that in night school.
Sorry, I don't understand night school, so it doesn't work for me.
Well, also because you've just written your first book. I say first because I'm expecting more, but so you want to get
you.
Promoted. The 5 keys to get you there. It's a self-help book for working schmoes who are looking to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wrote this book because I'm on BFM and I work with Frida Liu and people like this on the Enterprise Raise Your Game segment because that's what I do for a living. I run a corporate training and management consulting company. I've also ventured into executive leadership coaching now for over the last 5-6 years, and I've got some fairly decent clients in Malaysia, top-notch GLCs as well as private enterprises. I decided that, you know, I think anyone in this industry, in the self-help industry, in the management consulting industry, you know, it's a pipeline dream. Obviously, as a kid, my father's a university professor,
and he's written many books.
Way too many books that no one reads. Obviously, I didn't say that. I'm sure he'll be upset with me if I said that. But he wrote academic books, and there was something quite magical about the fact that he wrote books. You know, as I was growing up, I always felt that you had to be this doyen to write a book. You had to have this, you know, body of knowledge, and people would, you know, would be in awe of you. So even as a kid, I thought, oh, one day I'll write a book. You know? And then, of course, the rigmarole of life takes over.
Because writing a book is not easy.
Is not anywhere near as easy as the romantic notion of, you know, hiding away and collecting your thoughts and
Correct,
penning it down.
There's no magic to it.
None.
It's just hard work.
It's hard graft, you know. And you find that as you're writing, you completely doubt yourself the whole time. Because every time you put something down, you go, really? You know, will someone read this? Am I saying the right thing? And especially with the work that I do, because I've got, you know, a 15-year run with my corporate consulting work.
Well, there are expectations.
Absolute expectations and also self-imposed expectations. I write something down and I think, you know, what if one of my coaches actually reads this and comes and challenges me and says, hang on a minute, in 2002, you told me something else. You know, you made me do something completely different. So I had to fact check it. I had to go back, do it. It was a labor of love, actually. But interestingly enough, I think for myself, I've cracked the code in terms of how I should write.
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, you passed me an advanced copy to read and get an opinion on how the flow was, right?
Of course. And also to correct my language.
To correct your language and a bit of grammar. And you know, I have a quote in the book as well. But what I found fascinating about reading your book, and I'm not a fan of self-help books, but here's the thing. I think there's a certain personality of the kind of people who would buy self-help books, and I'm probably not your target audience
at all.
There is a demographic that will buy it. Mm-hmm. But what I enjoyed about your book and why I happily gave that quote.
Thank you. Yes.
And not just because you're my friend, but because I truly meant it.
Full disclosure here.
Full disclosure. But the reason why was because it was simple and straightforward and to the point. Yeah. As in, you say the 5 keys to get you there and you lay it out. So any person who wants to get somewhere can get straight to it.
And that was...
You don't beat around the bush.
And that was absolutely my objective when I wrote the book.
You want to do this? Here are five
follow
steps.
These rules.
Do it.
Yeah. Follow these five keys, and each key is broken down into five steps. Take these steps. It's 25 steps that amount to the five keys. And if you do them well, then you'll get there. I can't give you a money-back guarantee. I wish I could. and I was almost thinking of doing it. And then I think someone told me to cut it. I think my lawyer said, stop it. You know what I mean? Don't overreach you a little bit. But I wrote it in that manner. I wanted it to be written that way. Because, I mean, for the work that I do, I need to read a lot of books. I read a lot of books, I watch a lot of documentaries, and I spend a lot of time attending seminars and so on, just to gain a body of knowledge. And one of the things that I find very difficult with self-help books is that they're very big, and they're written in small print, and they're very complex. Because I think quite a lot of self-help books take on, although it's a separate genre on its own, they tend to fall under what I think are academic books. And academic books use a lot of citations, want to spend a lot of time trying to justify why a particular theory works or doesn't. You have, you know, five studies that they quote, but 27 authors they reference. And by the time you finish all that, I've forgotten what the first line was. You know?
And you're not sure what you can actually apply to your real life.
Yeah. So I tend to, I deconstruct self-help books all the time. I pick a book, I pick up stuff that I want. I remove things and I move things around and I just write in the margins. And I thought it was a lot of, you know, it's a lot of work to read a book. And my gift, I thought, would be to actually distill all of that. Now, as you know, being my friend and also, you know, hearing me on radio, I talk a lot as well. And that's what I do for a living. So I run a training program for 8 hours.
But also that's part of why it works, why what you do works, because it's your personality and charisma and the way you talk about something that can convince people maybe take these steps.
Yeah, in a training program, that's how it is. Yeah.
But was that difficult to translate to text?
Absolutely a nightmare to because, you know, the book is now 108 pages.
That's, and you're not just expecting your friends to buy it.
No.
You want complete strangers who don't hear the sound of your voice when they're reading this text.
And who can actually then, if they read it, you know, they must feel empowered after reading it. And I think that's the word I want. That's the kind of, you know, base theme that I wanted coming through in the book. And that was the hardest part for me, which is why I had to give it to people like you to condense it down for me in the sense that, you know, tell me, I had 11 readers. And essentially the pre-readers before it went to publication. And essentially I asked these 11 readers to help me cut down my verbosity more than anything else, get down. And in fact, my wife was the best person for me because my wife is Austrian and English is not her first language. She would look at a sentence and go, why are you writing it so long?
Why are you using so many words?
That's right. You know, and she said, what do you mean? And when I, you know, because I have to distill it down to, like, you know, for words to make her understand something, she said, why don't you just write that down? Because that seems to resonate with me. And instead of
writing it like how you just explained it to me.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I did with the book as well. So I brought it down from a 200 and plus page tome. It came down to 108. And I like reading it, and I tested this. Okay, I'm not a speed reader myself, and I get distracted very easily. And of course, I have a vested interest. I wrote it, therefore I read it more intently. But I've noticed that many people coming back to me and saying that they can actually read it in one sitting, which I think in some ways is a benchmark for a good book for me. That if you can actually not put it down and you can do it in 2 hours, not by your standards, you can do it in, I don't know, 7 minutes or something because reader.
But also the fact that it's a self-help book, and that's what you need. I'm assuming that the person who picks up this book and says, you know what, I'm stuck in my career. I need to move forward and I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And maybe my organization hasn't provided me with these kind of developmental courses.
Absolutely.
I pick up this book and it shouldn't be a chore.
No.
Because work is already a chore.
Sure. Life is a chore.
Yeah,
and I'm already feeling a bit down and out in the dumps. Yeah?
And 107 absolutely. Pages, 108 pages, yeah. I can get through it, at the snap of a finger.
That's right. I think a lot of the thing that I've also realized with when I'm doing my coaching programs is that often it's not that people don't have hopes and desires, but it's the dearth of hope. You know, I mean, when you can't see the light in front of you that actually pulls you down. And that affects a tremendous number of other things in your life, your private life, your personal life, your relationships, your financial life. Everything brings you down. And I also wanted to write this book in a way that would help people get buoyed. You know, so they read it. So it's not just a rah-rah book or a motivational book. It's trying to balance the two, getting them buoyed at the same time, giving them tools.
Yeah.
You know, so, and not being complex about it.
But you know what the other problem with a lot of self-help books is, and which I find that you don't do, is a lot of self-help books and self-help authors, when you're reading it, it is a real testament to how smart they think they are.
Yeah.
And
are you saying I wasn't smart in the
world? Well, you're clever, Shankar Shantaram, but you weren't showing off, is what I'm saying. So, and you know, that's very important because you don't want to be talked down to.
And it's like some points where I make a very simple statement, and I do address that. I say I make a simple statement, and some of you may be thinking like, wow, I mean, that's not rocket science. But literally, it's not. Yeah.
But here's the thing. The common sense that is in this book is not so common.
Yeah.
A lot of the time when you speak to people, they know it.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know how to do it.
Yeah. And they need a reminder.
Exactly.
And they need a succinct reminder, more than a verbose reminder, so, or a reminder that bangs them in the head a little bit. You know, so I've written along those lines to offer them the simplicity of steps that you can actually take to get yourself forward. And I've tried to make it conversational.
Yes.
So I wanted to write it in a way where it would be almost like if I had a coaching session with you. You know, I'd sit one-on-one with you and we talk. And that's what I do for a living.
A lot of the self-help books we get are from the UK, the US, Australia, from I guess, Western countries, which don't necessarily address the inherent baggage that we have as Asians.
Yeah.
This respect we must have for authority. Yeah. This
The power distance index here, which is the highest in the world, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. The deference we must pay.
Yeah.
Which flies in the face of the confidence that you tell people to put forward.
That's right. The fearlessness that you need as part of the whole self-help genre.
And
so
how was approaching that? Because because we come from places where we're exposed to so much of this Western media, Western literature. It's part of what we read and consume.
Absolutely.
And we apply it in our day-to-day, but that's just our personality.
Yeah. I think a lot of people live the juxtaposing life. You know, where they want that freedom and they whatever the media offers them in terms of, you know, their own personal growth, reading, understanding, and thinking that this is the kind of fearless life that I need, where I can actually walk up to my boss and say, hey, I think you made a mistake, you know, but I want to be your friend and I want to, you know, not, you know, I don't want you to feel that I am...
some young punk.
Yeah, young punk and overstepping the line. I've tried to write the book that way as well by focusing on something very important, which I think a lot of self-help books do, but perhaps not in the context of how our lifestyles are here, which is creating relationships with the people that matter to you. Now, the first key that I talk about is the first key of getting promoted. So you want to get promoted, the title of the book. The first key is getting noticed. You know, how do you put yourself up there and get noticed? And I talk about a few things. I got 5 steps there, and they're in the book. You know, it's achievement and, you know, admitting failure and so on. But one of the things,
of course, flies in the face of everything we're taught as Indians, Chinese, and Malays, right? Don't blow your own trumpet.
That's
don't talk about yourself.
That's
if you're good, someone else will acknowledge you.
And that thing, that's exactly what I'm saying. The third step in my first key is called getting social. And getting social, and what I'm saying here is, and I threw back, I'm a real Blackadder fan. You know,
I watched
it all through my I think my formative years were formed. My youthhood was, you know, developed by Edmund Blackadder.
Now I'm worried.
And in one of the I write this in the book with getting social, you know, and people ask me this. In fact, I was on a TV interview a few days ago, and someone the host asked me, you know, you say getting social, but what if I'm not the social type? You know, I can't go out, I can't socialize with my boss. And I think people mistake getting social with socializing.
Mm.
Yeah, and I said, this, I'm not asking you to socialize with your boss. It is important that you do what you do well, but it is also important that people are aware that you have this. So, you know, in one of the Blackadder episodes, Lieutenant George looks at Edmund Blackadder, Captain Blackadder, and says, George evidently can paint, right? And Blackadder goes, George, didn't know you can paint. You know, and George goes, sir, one doesn't blow one's own trumpet. You know, and Blackadder comes back with this fantastic retort. He says, Yes, of course, you know. But at least you could have told us that you had a trumpet. You know? Essentially, that's what I'm trying to say. You don't actually have to go out. You don't have to be an insufferable bore by bragging and boasting about what you do. But you need to actually authentically show people that
you've done something.
Yes, that you have these skill sets and that you're willing to... And getting social also means that you can humanize your relationship with your employers, and so that's what you need to do.
In your training, you meet a lot of Malaysians from all walks of life, right? It's not just the high-end C-suite people.
It's
every
a combination.
Level.
Yeah.
So you may not know this, but Malaysians, we buy a ton of self-help books and romance novels. That's what's always at the top of bestseller lists.
Right. I thought romance novels, I understand. But, you know, self-help books, that was a bit of a surprise.
I don't know if they read it.
Right.
They buy it, but I don't know if they read it. Now, that's interesting because that means, and by just logical conclusion, that we are somehow interested in self-improvement. Mm. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely.
When you're training these people, teaching these people.
Absolutely. People are interested in getting on in the world. You know, everyone wants a leg up.
Because
you know?
We don't have a culture of going back to school.
Continuing education is not something which is a big thing here in Malaysia. I think we need to address that. You know, I think we need to address it. And that's part of the thing that my own professional life, I'm spending a lot of time getting people back into education. Because I think that's the only way. That's the only way. That's the only way of life, really.
Well, also, you can hit 45 right. and you can be completely bored with what you're doing with life. And the only way is to re-educate yourself.
Educate, absolutely, and relearn things. Self-help. There is a tremendous need in Malaysia for people wanting to what I find is Malaysians are quite pliable. You know, if you have the right charismatic leader or speaker or someone who is able to articulate their thoughts in a way which is, we like slapstick in Malaysia, so if you have a funny speaker, immediately we all gravitate towards them. Stand-up comedy, for example, which is another business that I'm involved in, has evolved over the last 5 years to, today in Kuala Lumpur, every week there will be at least 4 or 5 stand-up comedy shows. You know, 10 years ago, that was unheard of. We had to buy tickets to go to Singapore to watch a stand-up comedian. Whereas, and the take-up rate is so high because people want to feel a sense of, you know, there's also an urban culture of wanting to do the things that they watch on television that Seinfeld does and somebody else does. And so there is this. And the whole self-help genre in the United States, for example, I think took off in the 60s and 70s, you know, because it was all about the American dream. You know, you can get out there and you can do this. And Napoleon Hill wrote Think and Grow Rich in the 1920s, and that grew, and you had a whole plethora of writers. So it's caught up with us now. So now young people go like, oh, you know, I also should start reading all these books. But then you find it's written for the American audience, or it's written for a European audience, or it's written for a different mindset. And you're right, people buy these books a lot, but many of them don't read any of these books. And you have a huge collection in your wall of all these fantastic things. I mean, I do this all the time. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey is probably one of the greatest books ever written.
Everyone's bought it.
Yeah, and hardly everyone. So I make a joke in my training programs, usually, how many of you have got the book? How many of you have seen the book? How many of you have touched the book? You know? And everyone has touched the book at least once. I said, that's fine, that's fine. Even if you don't read it, touch it, get the power from
osmosis.
Osmosis, yeah. So I think you're right that, you know, there is this great need for it. But and that's also why this book, my book, is written in this manner. In a manner which is very approachable to the Malaysian reader. And I also think it's not, you know, I've sent this book around the world. It's very interesting. I just got a call yesterday from my wife is Austrian, as I said, and I just came back from Austria, and I, you know, distributed it to my friends and family, and a business owner there read the book, called me up and said, "This is absolutely what I need right now, you know, for my team." And she asked me, she said, "Is it possible to get this translated to German?" And I said, "Yes, everything is possible." But the business mind in me jumped up immediately and said, "Everything is possible." Then I thought, "Hang on a minute, you know, I'm sure we'll figure something out, you know, to get this sorted." But yeah, there is a great need for self-help books, but there is a great need for the appropriate self-help books as well.
Well, funny you mentioned that, because that was my next question, which is, you've read a lot of this stuff, and you know, the popular ones aside, Stephen Covey, everyone knows that, but how do you weed through? There are hundreds. You walk into any bookshop in Malaysia and the shelves are lined with them.
Well, it's like anything else. You know, you go and buy a self-help book based on what recommendations that you get from other people. So people like me in my training programs, I will tell my participants in classes, go and buy 7 Habits. Actually, I've stopped telling, I'm sure the Franklin Covey Center is going to be upset with me for saying that. Stop telling them to buy the 7 Habits. I tell them to go online and find the condensed version now, because Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is about 400 pages. And it is hard. I bought it when I was 22 or 23 years old. I eventually read it when I was 35.
There you go.
You know, and because it, and also self-help books, like many other books, you know, spiritual books, for example. I mean, you know, people who are immersed in spirituality will say that you can buy a book. I've heard this. I don't know how true it is, but I think it translates a little bit to self-help books as well. You can buy a book, but you will only read it when you're ready for it.
Well, you know
I think that's how it works with self-help books.
I think that's true with all literature.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we force children to read the classics.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not ready for it. You want a 15-year-old to read Moby Dick, it's crazy. Yeah. But you
doesn't connect with them.
Exactly. You know? But you'll reach a point in your life where something triggers something
and you
go, you know what? I need to explore some Steinbeck or Shakespeare.
I bought Seven Habits of Highly Effective People when I was 22. And this is absolutely true. I read it only in my 30s. It moved from me from university to other places to here and there. And then finally, when I was opening my business and I was finding it very tough to run what I wanted to run, and I had a lot of self-doubt, and I thought maybe this will help me. Because you go to, that's why it's called self-help. You know, you want help. Therefore, you go to the book.
It's also a cheap option for Malaysians. Returning to education is an expensive proposition. And so, therefore, if you want to do something yourself...
Yeah. Returning to education is also another problem in Malaysia, because we've got a tremendously bad work culture in this country, right? So we average 50, 55 hours a week of work for most people. You had no time to go back to.
That's right.
And you don't have the energy or the financial resources. And also over the 90s, profiteering and racketeering of such, you know, with private institutions, private colleges. So if you walk into a college and you are paying 18,000 ringgit for a year to do a second degree or a master's degree or a particular course, you walk into that college, it's not equipped with the right library. You don't have the right teachers. You get some pimple-faced 25-year-old teaching you. You think this is not good. Whereas you go and buy a book with a properly researched book, which is a certain amount of pedigree, referenced author, you feel better. You feel like you're getting better bang for your money, you know, better bang for your buck.
And you know what? When you do return to education at that stage in life, you're not seeking the paper qualification.
No.
You're just seeking the skills.
Yeah, you want to move up in the world, and you want to be able to, essentially, you want to deal with your life in a much more fluid and easier and, you know, rewarding way. And that's what you're looking for. And I've a long time ago, someone told me once, don't let your schooling interrupt your education, you know, and I'm a firm believer in that. So I don't think you need to go back to school to learn. But I think if there was a school of real learning, I'd be interested. And I think that's what I do with my work, you know, essentially. And I'm actually creating something around So You Want to Get Promoted, this idea that I've espoused in this book about how to get this out and how to get this out to people. See, my target audience, of course, people who are in employment will enjoy the book because it'll give them some new insights. But primarily my book is targeted for people aged between 25 and 35 who are in the job market first 4 or 5 years, you know, coming out. And how do you get a,
and And you've never learned any of this in university.
They don't teach you this. Yeah. Unless they've changed the curriculum since you and I went to university. And my last check, I do some work with them. No, there's absolutely none of this is taught. And one of the most interesting quotes from this book, from my pre-reader, was from the CFO of Siemens, you know, Malaysia. I actually gave him the book. He read it. And I was astounded what he said when he wrote back to me. He said, if I got this book at the age of 25, it would have cut down my learning curve by at least 10 years. And that's essentially, I mean, that for me.
I would have been CEO at 45.
At 45. You know, he's now 53 years old. He would have been the CEO, CFO at the age of 40. Yeah.
So what's next? I mean, have you caught the bug? Or is writing still a tedious chore?
No, writing is a tedious chore. For me, it's a tedious chore because I talk too much, therefore I need to condense it. But I think I've cracked it. I think I know how to do this now. I think I can write much more lucidly without immersing myself in myself.
So we're going to get a So You Want To ... series.
That's my idea. And also I'm looking at, you know, because my company is called the EQTD Consulting, and that's what I do. I'm also toying around with the idea of establishing the Center for EQ right now, which will focus on real learning.
Wonderful. I look forward to it, Shankar. Thank you so much for coming on Bookmark and talking to us today.
Thank you for having me, Ma. Thank you, man.
I've been speaking to Shankar Shantaram. You can find his brand new book, So You Want to Get Promoted, The 5 Keys to Get You There, at MPH Bookstores. You've been listening to Afterwards. This is Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.